Council and parties, welcome to Division Two of the Court of Appeals. We have two cases set for this afternoon. The first case is People versus Flakes. Council President Ready?
Yes.
All right. Second case is Farmers versus Anderson. Council President Ready in that case? Not yet. All right. I'm sure you folks have argued here before, if not in this building, in the old building. Let me just briefly review the ground rules. This case is set for 15 minutes aside. You'll be guided by a lighting system at the podium, which works as follows. When your time commences, the green light comes on. When 10 minutes have expired, the amber light will come on. And when your full 15 minutes have expired, the red light will come on. There is a counter at the podium that counts backwards from 15, so you know how much time you have remaining. If you'd like me to keep track of it for you, let me know and I'll try and do that for you. We have read the briefs in your case. We're familiar with the facts as you set them forth. So to the extent you want to proceed just directly to your legal argument, that's fine with us. However, the argument is yours to shape and to present as you wish. Please feel free to adjust the podium up and down by the use of the toggle switch. We would ask you to stay close to the podium, please, because we're recording your arguments. We find it helpful to go back and listen to them again on occasion. And if you stray from the podium, your voice will not be picked up well. Finally, the arguments are available over the internet within a couple of days of today's argument. So if there's anything of a confidential nature you do not wish to have available over the internet, be guided accordingly. Finally, if anybody has a cell phone in the audience, please ensure it's turned off. We're ready for argument.
May it please the court. My name is Kim Dvorak. That's D-V-O-R-C-H-A-K. My bar license number is 26795, and I am the attorney representing Gary Flakes in this matter. Gary Flakes was a 16-year-old boy who was direct filed in adult criminal court and who, now on his third appeal, is still in pursuit of a constitutional sentence. The two questions on this direct appeal from his resentencing are whether the trial court abused discretion in consideration of the transfer factors that are required in determining whether to sentence a child to juvenile court or adult court. And the second question is whether the trial court erred by dismissing Gary Flakes' Blakely claims. I will begin with the latter. The case of Blakely v. Washington is applicable to Gary Flakes because a new sentencing hearing was ordered by the Colorado Supreme Court, and that new sentencing hearing must comply with the U.S. Constitution. We rely, with respect to the issue of finality, we rely on the 2008 Supreme Court, Colorado Supreme Court case of Leyva, L-E-Y-V-A, v. People, 184 P3rd 48, which speaks to when a sentence is final. And the case is well settled that an illegal sentence is not final. When a case Go ahead.
Let me interrupt. Sorry. Was the original sentence illegal?
Yes.
Why?
It was illegal because it was not imposed with the requisite findings and because it was not clear that the trial court knew it had discretion to impose a juvenile sentence.
So the Supreme Court determined that it was illegal because of that?
The Supreme Court determined that the sentencing proceedings did not comply with the U.S. Constitution, and it relied on the case of Kent versus United States, which speaks to when a juvenile can be sentenced as an adult.
Well, it held that the trial court has discretion.
It held the trial court had discretion.
In this unique circumstance.
Correct.
And it held that the court may have exercised the discretion, but the record didn't show the judge had made the requisite findings.
That's true. The court specifically found that the trial court seemed to say it did not believe the crimes Gary Flakes was found guilty of even allowed a juvenile sentence.
Here's what seems to be the essence of the case. The record does not adequately reflect whether the district court fully exercised its sentencing discretion. Though the court said that it considered the factors with regard to sentencing Flakes as an adult and juvenile, it did not state what those factors were or why. And so when the judge determined, applied those factors and determined that it had properly sentenced the defendant as an adult, what made the sentence, the original sentence illegal?
Because the Supreme Court said that a sentence cannot be legally, quote, a legal sentence cannot be imposed unless the required findings are made. And this is Flakes 153rd, P3rd at 436. The court found that there were constitutional implications in sentencing a child as an adult that risked an arbitrary deprivation of the juvenile's liberty interest in avoiding harsh punishment. That was Flakes 153, P3rd at 437. Because of that liberty interest and those constitutional implications, a legal sentence could not be imposed unless the required findings were made. This was a CRIM P35A motion. That's how the trial court interpreted it. That's how the Supreme Court interpreted it. And the Supreme Court ordered a new sentencing hearing, new in its entirety. It wasn't simply remanded for further findings. It was remanded for an entirely new sentencing hearing, and therefore the trial court had discretion to impose any sentence, a juvenile sentence or any type of adult sentence that Gary Flakes was eligible for. And given that it was an entirely new sentencing hearing, that's why Blakely applies. The district court also erred in consideration of the transfer factors, and I would just like to speak briefly. Obviously, that is an abuse of discretion review with respect to whether or not the district court adequately reviewed the transfer factors. But the sort of the overall problem in this case is that no one was held accountable for the actual murders. With respect to first-degree murder, both of the co-defendants were convicted of accessory. And so that created a dilemma within the community and a lot of very concerned citizens in Colorado Springs that nobody was held accountable for what they believed was first-degree murder. I believe that the district court has misinterpreted the required factors and mischaracterized Gary Flakes' crimes of conviction as actually being more serious than they are. I think that the court has looked to the overall weight and circumstances of the case, and the desire to punish someone outweighed all of the other considerations. And the bottom line is these were nonviolent, low-level felony offenses. They were eligible for probation. In the juvenile court, they were eligible for, at most, a Department of Youth Corrections sentence of 0 to 2 years. In essence, Gary was punished for that. Because his crimes were so low severity, he wasn't eligible for a serious sentence, as in an aggravated juvenile sentence. He was only eligible for a 0 to 2 because his crimes were of such low severity. But yet that was used against him to impose an adult prison sentence. And so our position is that the desire to punish has outweighed all of the other factors, and that the trial court failed to consider Gary Flakes' likelihood of rehabilitation, as well as the protection of the community that the juvenile facilities would have adequately provided. There was evidence at the hearing that Gary had done very well in the Department of Corrections, had received very minimal write-ups, and the doctor who testified, Dr. Friedman, stated that based on his assessment of Gary Flakes, he did believe that he was of low risk to the community and would have been amenable to treatment in the juvenile court. So for those reasons, we ask that Gary's resentencing be overturned because the court improperly applied the transfer factors, and also that the case be remanded for a new sentence that is compliant with Blakely v. Washington. And I'll defer the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Catherine Hansen, registration number 25464, appearing on behalf of the people in this matter. Essentially, the theme of the defendant's first argument is that Gary Flakes is being punished for what Jerron Grant did and for what Jerron Grant could not be punished for. I think if you look at the trial court's very detailed, very thorough findings, this court will see that the court considered all of the appropriate factors, considered them the context of the defendant, his actions, his background, his circumstances, and made thorough findings under these circumstances. I don't plan to go through any of these factors. I think they're evident from the record. But I think the court made it very clear it was imposing, it was making its findings based on Gary Flake's unique situation. I'd like to talk a little bit about, unless this court has any questions on the transfer findings or the sentencing findings, I'd like to talk a little bit about the finality and the Blakely issue.
Before we get to that, Ms. Hansen, I do want to ask about your opponent's contention that what this defendant was convicted of were nonviolent crimes and he could not be sentenced as if it were a violent crime. Would you please speak to that?
Well, I find it hard to see how criminally negligent homicide, which results in the death of a person, he was convicted of criminally negligent homicide for the death of one of the victims, is not violent. It's a very serious offense. He was convicted as a complicitor based on the actions, his actions of assisting Jerron Grant in shooting both of the victims. For whatever reason, and I handled both Jerron Grant's case and Gary Flake's case in the direct appeal, I still to this day do not know why the jury acquitted either of them of murder, but it is what it is. He was convicted of criminally negligent homicide, which resulted in the death of the victim. He wasn't convicted of criminally negligent homicide just for his actions of driving away. He's being held accountable as the principal for criminally negligent homicide, and that's a serious, violent offense. Accessory at the fact, I don't think anyone characterized that as violent, but I don't think the factors require that it be violent. It is certainly a serious offense. It perhaps contributed to the acquittal of the shooter in this case, but it certainly made it very difficult for the officers to discover, investigate this crime and the prosecution to prosecute this crime. And so I think accessory is a class 4 felony. I don't see how that cannot be considered a serious felony. Carries even the presumptive range sentence is a serious prison sentence. So I think both crimes the trial court found were serious and justified an adult sentence. With regard to the Blakely issue, first I'd like to point out, I know counsel quoted some language from the Flakes opinion. First, I'd like to point out nowhere in the Flakes opinion does the court characterize Mr. Flake's sentence as illegal. At no point does it characterize it as illegal. At no point does it use the word we must vacate the sentence. There's no indication that the sentence was altered in any way.
What do you do with the language that your opponent has quoted to us from Flakes, though?
This language, she said, the direct file statute does not provide for any sentencing authority for unenumerated offenses. And this is the language. To impose a legal sentence, a court must impose a sentence according to statutory authority. Is that the language you're referring? That language is in the section of the opinion talking about whether or not an adult sentence is available sentence and whether or not a juvenile sentence is an available sentence. So it doesn't address the issue at all of whether this sentence in this case was legal or not. It was addressing only the issue of, because most of this case dealt with whether the court could impose an adult sentence, whether the court could impose a juvenile sentence, and also whether that decision was mandatory or discretionary. That language comes directly in the discussion of whether the court, what sentencing options were available. If we go to the section where they're talking about the issue of findings. Once they determine that the court has the discretion, then they decide the issue of findings. And the court basically just, the only thing referencing a legal sentence in that section is the court says, reading these statutes together, referencing the direct file statute and the transfer statute, a district court sentencing a juvenile found guilty of unenumerated offenses must also make the same findings before imposing a legal sentence. I don't think that language can be construed as saying that a sentence without the findings is therefore not legal. I think it's saying you need to make these findings before imposing a sentence that's otherwise authorized by law. So there's nothing in this opinion that even suggests that this sentence originally was illegal. I know that We have discussion of resentencing. We have discussion of conduct a new sentencing hearing. This court does this all the time where it sends it back for another hearing. In Dunlap, we went back, of course, in Dunlap, this court did find that the sentence was illegal. But we often go back for hearings to make additional findings. In the Batson case, we see that, the Batson situation, we see that a lot. In those situations, the judgment of a conviction is not necessarily vacated. We just have further findings that are necessary, and so it goes back for those findings.
This was a 35A appeal, right? This is...
Well, I believe that's how he filed it. I think it's curious that it's treated as a 35A. I think if it's a 35A at all, and they didn't go into this, no one argued this.
The opening paragraph of the Flake's opinion talks about post-conviction proceeding, but it doesn't really discuss in detail the nature of that.
Well, I certainly don't think the issue of whether this is an illegal sentence versus a sentence imposed in an illegal manner, which is also a 35A claim, I don't think anyone really discussed that. That was not anything that was at issue or decided in this case. So while I don't think that the sentence is at all illegal, the original sentence was at all illegal, at the most, this was a 35A claim that it was imposed in an illegal manner. And so we don't have a situation where the sentence was illegal. But even if somehow this court were to construe the sentence, the original sentence is illegal, and construe the situation as going back for full de novo resentencing, I think under Dunlap, as court properly recognized, when you have a component of a sentence that's determined to be illegal, in that case restitution, in this case the failure to make findings, that does not render the judgment of conviction non-final for retroactivity purposes. This court went through several reasons why, all of which, or most of which, apply here. If you look at the retroactivity law, it says state convictions are final once the availability for direct appeal and petitioning for cert has completed. There's no question we had that here. And so for the reasons set forth in Dunlap, even if this court were to find that the sentence was illegal, and it went back for resentencing, he's not entitled to a retroactive application of Blakely in this case. Unless there's any further questions, we would ask that this court affirm. Thank you very much.
I'd like to cite for the court two places in the record where this case is referred to a 35A. First is in Gary Flake's original pro se motion, which is on page 367 of the court file. Gary had originally filed a pro se motion arguing both 35A sentencing claims as well as 35C ineffective assistance of counsel claims. Those 35C claims were never appealed or pursued. And in fact, the trial court ruled on the motion as a 35A motion on page 393. And the Colorado Supreme Court in Flakes specifically states that Gary Flakes is challenging the legality of his sentence, and that the Colorado Supreme Court would then review the legality of his sentence. So the record is clear that this is in fact a 35A claim regarding an illegal sentence. It is a different scenario than what we might traditionally think of in the adult sentencing world, where an illegal sentence is contrary to the terms of the statute. This is a more of a hybrid situation where the court is not simply choosing within the sentencing presumptive or aggravated range, but the court has to choose between two systems, the adult system and the juvenile system. And because the court is not simply selecting a year of terms, it's selecting between which system is appropriate for that child. These findings are constitutionally required, and they are integral to the determination as to whether or not the sentence is appropriate. So we're not simply looking at a component of the case, as in restitution and Dunlap. We're looking to really the initial consideration in sentencing a child who's been convicted of unenumerated charges after direct file. The initial consideration is between those two systems, and for that reason, these findings are required. Now, in determining that an adult sentence was appropriate, the court did rely on facts with respect to Gary Flakes, and as we've argued in our opening brief, many of those facts are constitutionally impermissible under Blakely. The court relied on the fact that there had been violent rap lyrics found in Gary's car at the time. He relied on a picture of Gary with some relatives that are holding weapons. That picture wasn't even evidence in Gary's trial. That picture was evidence in Jerron Grant's trial. And so the court is relying on facts to aggravate Gary's sentence that are constitutionally impermissible, and the court is doing that in the context of deciding whether an adult or juvenile sentence is appropriate.
Counsel, you seem to be arguing that that the sentence is illegal and that Dunlap doesn't apply here because in Dunlap it was only a component of the case. I'm not understanding the distinction between that case and this one. You have a conviction, you have a sentence. Why is the sentence here simply not like that, just a component of the entire judgment?
Well, this case is procedurally distinct from Dunlap. In Dunlap, there was a direct appeal, then there was a post-conviction motion, there was a direct appeal of the post-conviction motion, and then there was a claim that the sentence was illegal because of the failure to impose restitution. This case is two steps less.
Why does that make a difference? I don't follow.
Because in this case, this is Gary Flakes has not exhausted all of his remedies. This is a 35A. So this is in the same, this is a resentencing.
So was Dunlap.
Correct, but this is a resentencing to impose a legal sentence with
Dunlap.
The Constitution.
I understand what you're trying mm-hmm. to say, that there's a different layer here than there was in Dunlap. But the Dunlap considerations seem to be the same. Once you've got a determination of the conviction remains valid and final, and you can't, for retroactivity purposes, claim a case that was announced 4 or 5 years later should have applicability. What should change our minds about that here?
Well, in Dunlap, in this case, the conviction was not final until Gary was resentenced in a legal and constitutional manner. So Gary's conviction was not final until January of last year.
That's the Leyva discussion, and in Dunlap, the division distinguished Leyva and said that only applies for purposes of determining the 3-year statute of limitations. What do you say to that?
Because we are still on the direct appeal of the resentencing. So we're not finished with the 35A appeal and then filing another post-conviction motion arguing the sentence is illegal. We're still in the resentencing and the direct appeal from the resentencing. So at the moment that the new sentencing hearing is being conducted, there is not yet at that time a legally imposed sentence. And so therefore Blakely does apply because the court is considering its discretion, it's considering all of these factors, and it has to consider those factors within the current state of the law. So it's a different procedural posture, and the resentencing, because the resentencing is being held de novo, that there is no final conviction until the closure of that resentencing hearing.
Flake's opinion did not mention Blakely.
That's correct. It was not an issue that the court granted certiorari review of. But nonetheless, I think the language in Flakes is clear that this is a de novo sentencing. It is a new sentencing hearing. And for that reason, Blakely does apply. I realize it's an issue of first impression in Colorado. As I've cited in my opening brief, other states have found that Blakely is applicable on de novo resentencing. And I would ask the court to make the same finding. Thank you.
Thank you both for your arguments this afternoon. The case will stand submitted. We'll issue a written opinion in due course.